involves additional planning, greater resources, maybe props and costumes. And even if you gain entry, there's still the problem of getting the target to the street, if Rutherford was holed up in his apartment. Reacher thanked Officer Rule, then took the stairs from the courthouse basement three at a time and almost knocked over a guy who was hurrying in through the doors. He was slightly built, wearing chinos and a polo shirt, with a logo, to show he meant business. Rusty Rutherford himself. Not holed up, not kidnapped. Not yet. Reacher grabbed Rutherford by the shoulders, spun him around, and bundled him back outside. "Let go!" Rutherford tried to squirm free. What are you doing, Reacher? It would be better to stay away from the police for a while. Reacher released him. I just told them you're in trouble again, maybe missing. They might have questions. I almost was in trouble. Rutherford straightened his shirt. What happened? I came downstairs in my building this morning, heading for the coffee shop. I got as far as the door, but one of my neighbors was on his way in. He's an older gentleman, so I hung back to let him get past, and I saw a face I recognized across the street. The woman who was driving the car those assholes tried to push me into yesterday. What did you do? I freaked out. I totally panicked. I ran to the doorman and screamed at him to get me a cab to the airport. Then I went upstairs to grab some things, but I couldn't think straight. Couldn't decide what to pack. I knew I had my wallet with my ID and my credit card, so I figured I'd just get away to anywhere and buy whatever I needed when I got there. So I went back down and jumped into the cab when it finally came. It took an eternity, or it felt like it anyway. So why are you here now? I got halfway to Nashville and then I thought, what am I doing? I don't know how to be on the run. I don't want to be on the run. I want to stay here, clear my name. And then I thought about you.
What about me?
You were in jail for saving my ass a second time. I couldn't leave you behind bars, so I figured bailing you out was the least I could do.
I appreciate the sentiment, Rusty, but the fight outside the diner wasn't about you.
Yes, it was. Those guys were there to grab me. Holly, the waitress, was sure about that, which is why she helped me out through the back door into the alley.
Reacher shook his head. Those idiots were there for me. They thought I was working for the insurance guy who's negotiating to get the town's computers back up and running. Holly set it up. Remember the questions she was asking? About who I arrived in town with?
I don't understand.
They think they can make insurance negotiators work faster by roughing them up?
They didn't want me to work faster, Reacher said. They wanted me to back off.
That makes even less sense. Everyone in town wants to get back to normal as fast as possible.
Someone doesn't.
And whatever the reason, I think it's separate from the hot water you're in. I think we should find out for sure. And I think we should start by getting something to eat.
How will that help?
Always eat when you can. Then you won't have to when you can't. And it's an opportunity to kill two birds with one stone. If Holly's there anyway. It's time for her to spill some beans.
Reacher led the way around the side of the courthouse, and when they reached the parking lot, he tossed Marty's keys to Rutherford.
Here, he said, you drive.
Rutherford stopped dead.
Wait, whose car is this? Did you steal it?
It belongs to a guy I met this morning. He loaned it to me. He won't be needing it for a while.
I don't know.
Rutherford stayed still.
I have my own car. Why don't we use it?
This one's here. Yours isn't.
Rutherford touched the handle cautiously like he thought it might electrocute him, then opened the driver's door and climbed inside.
I thought we were going to the diner.
He scrabbled for the button to move the seat forward.
It's not far. We could walk.
Reacher shook his head. We can't leave the car here. We might need it later. And we're not going directly to the diner. I want you to drive around a little first.
Drive around where?
Anywhere. Show me your old school, your first girlfriend's house.
Why?
Because I'm hoping someone will follow us.
Rutherford turned right out of the lot, and for a few minutes his driving was awkward and jerky,
like a nervous teenager trying out for his permit before he was ready. He spent more time looking in the mirror than through the windshield. Twice he clipped the curb. But after a while, he settled and found his way past the house where he'd been born. Then he drove past his grade school. Then the house where an Irish girl named Siobhan had lived, who was a 6-year-old he'd hoped to marry, until she dumped him for refusing to give up his dream of becoming a race car driver. Next was the house his family had moved to when he was 10, his high school. And so he continued, threading his way from one neighborhood to another, some tidy and prosperous, some shabby and depressed, each with some kind of tie to his past. It was like traveling through a bricks-and-mortar encyclopedia of his life. Each new landmark seemed to relax or rejuvenate him. Each one made Reacher feel more claustrophobic. The idea of spending an entire life in one place made real and solid before his eyes. The route they took was perfect for Reacher's purpose. Too convoluted for anyone to follow without giving themselves away. Too random for anyone to anticipate and press on ahead. The only disappointment was that no one tried. Reacher wasn't inherently impatient. He wasn't tired of Rutherford's company or irritated by his commentary. But neither did he wish to prolong his time in the town. So after another minute, he told Rutherford to cut short his nostalgia tour and head for the alley next to the diner. "Your building's the one opposite here," Reacher said as they climbed out of the car. Rutherford nodded. "The woman you recognized from yesterday, the one who was watching you, where was she?" "I feel stupid now." Rutherford hung back. "Maybe I only imagined it was her. Maybe I overreacted to this whole thing. I didn't sleep very well last night and—" "No." Reacher turned to face him. "When your instinct tells you something's wrong, then something's wrong. Always listen to your gut. It's what will save you from getting shoved into the back of some thug's car." "The woman was pretending to browse in a store window, diagonally opposite from the entrance to my building. It's a drugstore, basically, but it sells all kinds of fancy things, so it calls itself an apothecary. It's full of candles and soft toys and home decor stuff, and it changes its window display every week. It's a jungle now. It was a beach last week. Something to do with giraffes the week before." Reacher looked around the corner and identified the store Rutherford had described. No one was near it. He checked the sidewalk in both directions and on both sides of the street. Neither of the people missing from the gas station was there. None of the people from the aborted ambush was there. "She's gone," Reacher said. "No one from yesterday's in sight. Now you look. Tell me if there's anyone else you've seen before. Anyone who paid you a little too much attention recently. In the coffee shop, at the grocery store, walking down the street. Even if you're not 100% sure, even if it's only a feeling." Rutherford peered out of the alley, keeping his body as far back as possible and stretching his neck like a turtle from its shell. Then he retreated and shook his head. "No one." Reacher took a step toward the entrance to the diner, and a synth rock song began to blare from Rutherford's phone. "I need to take this." Rutherford checked the number on the screen. "It's my lawyer." He moved 10 feet away and talked on the phone for less than a minute. "Assholes," he said when he returned. "Remember I told you I had subpoenaed my work laptop? Obviously my boss knows he's screwed if I get my hands on it because the town is now saying I can have it, sure, but not for 8 weeks. And then only if I pay $14,000 for them to redact confidential information now that I'm no longer a town employee." "Can they do that?" Reacher said. "My lawyer says they can. She says they've got me over a barrel. Is there any other way to get the laptop? Any legal tricks she can pull?" "Short of breaking in and taking it, no." "So what are you going to do?" "Agree, I guess. I need that computer. I've got the money. I can wait. And they say revenge is a dish best served cold, right?" The retired couple had left by the time Reacher and Rutherford stepped into the diner, and no other customers were in the place. They took the same booth as the previous night, with the turquoise Chevy and the view of both doors, and a couple of minutes later a waitress emerged from the kitchen carrying 2 mugs and a pot of coffee. It was the same woman who'd helped Reacher with the online telephone directory. "You found him then," she said, and nodded at Rutherford as she poured Reacher's drink.
I did, Reacher said. Now I'm looking for someone else.
Who is it this time?
Holly, your co-worker. Does she have a shift today?
This is her shift.
The waitress scowled.
It's supposed to be, anyway. But she's not here. She called in sick. Again.
Which is why I'm here covering for her.
Again.
Instead of going shopping in Nashville with my daughter like I planned.
Is Holly out sick often?
She's off work often. And she says she's sick.
But you don't believe her.
I'm not saying that. I guess it depends on your definition of sick. I do believe she's often not in a position to work.
Poor girl.
Or stupid girl. Take your pick.
You think there's something else going on?
The bottle, maybe?
Not the bottle. Try the fist.
She has an abusive husband. Or boyfriend? Not according to her. She says she's single, and I'm not calling her a liar.
But the makeup around her eyes?
That surely is.
She must put it on with a trowel some days.
And the long-sleeved shirts she wears when it's 100 degrees plus, they don't back her position, no sir. She's either hooked up with some kind of an asshole or she's the clumsiest person this side of a circus clown.
Now what can I get for you?
Reacher ordered a double stack of pancakes with extra bacon, then added 2 slices of apple pie, while Rutherford struggled to choose between waffles and crepes. He finally came down in favor of waffles, and as the waitress scribbled on her pad, Reacher asked if the place had any newspapers. He saw Rutherford smirk.
What? He said when the waitress was out of earshot. Don't you like to keep up with the news?
I do like the news.
Rutherford pulled out his phone.
That's the point. News. Not history.
The waitress sauntered back and dropped a pile of local and national papers on the table.
She should put them all in the recycling, Rutherford said. There's nothing in any of these you couldn't already have read on here.
He held up his phone.
In much more detail.
Oh, wait. He picked up a local paper from the top of the heap.
I'd missed that detail. Weird.
What is?
A journalist got murdered. I'd seen it in the headlines online, but I hadn't noticed her name. It's there. Look.
He put the paper down and pointed to the story just above the fold. It jumped out because she had contacted me a couple of times.
It feels odd when the victim is someone you knew of, even if you didn't know them exactly.
He read more of the story, and his face lost all its color.
Oh, God, this is gross.
It says she was kidnapped and kept alive, probably for days, and she was tortured. Then her body was cut up and dumped in 3 different places.
Let me see.
Reacher took the paper and read the story. Rutherford picked up his phone, hit some keys, and dragged his finger up and down the screen.
I can't find any more about it. There's a picture, but only of her before she disappeared.
You said she contacted you. Reacher put the paper down.
About what?
Rutherford shrugged.
The first time was a few weeks ago. She sent me an email. She was researching a story. Something to do with property records, I think. It was around the time the warehouse with all the town's archives in it burned down. All the records and documents going back to the Civil War. Everything was destroyed. She wanted to know if there were any digital records. So I guess she came to me because I was the IT manager.
Could you help her?
I remember thinking she might be in luck.
The town had just finished a huge project to digitize all its public documents and put them online. It was almost ready to go live, but I gave her the email address for the woman running the project anyway, in case she could get an early peek. Then a couple of days after the ransomware attack, she left me a voicemail message. She wanted to know if there was some other way to view the records now that the database was locked. Obviously there wasn't, and I had bigger problems on my hands, so I didn't follow up.
The waitress delivered their food, but Richard didn't start to eat right away. He was thinking. A woman who had been in contact with Rutherford had been kidnapped and murdered. A group had tried to kidnap Rutherford. A group with a track record of torture and dismemberment and dumping bodies in suitcases, if Marty was to be believed. Reacher was liking the situation less and less.
Rusty, I appreciate you coming back to bail me out this morning, he said when they had both finished eating, even though I'd already gotten out.
I was on my way out of town when some guys tried to ambush me. Four of the guys from yesterday. I think they're the same people who killed the journalist. You need to take this seriously. Very seriously. Or the next story in the paper will be about parts of your body being found in a bunch of different places. You should leave town. Right now. Don't even go back to your apartment. Leave town? And go where? And come back when? And do what in the meantime? Rutherford wiped his face with his napkin. If it's true that the people who were after me killed the journalist, that's pretty heavy action for a town this size. They must be from somewhere else. And if they can reach me here, they can reach me anywhere. What if I leave and wind up someplace I don't know my way around, where it's easier for them to catch me? So no, I'm going to stay, and I'm going to fight. Do you know how to fight? Reacher said. No, but you do. You've done okay against these guys so far. Rusty, I've been happy to help, but I'm not going to be here forever. Don't go just yet, please. Stay a while. I'll pay you. I have savings. I don't need money, and I wouldn't take your savings anyway. Okay, then. Forget money. I'll pay by teaching you about computers. Help you get into the 21st century. Or the 20th, anyway. Or at least to use a cell phone. Rutherford had a point about there being no guarantee of his safety if he ran. And it wasn't safe for him to stay, either. Not on his own. Not with federal agents who walked away from their promises to protect him. And not with people like Marty on the lookout, under orders to report his whereabouts. What if I do stay, Reacher said, for a day or two? And in return, you don't teach me anything about computers. It's a deal. Rutherford held out his hand. What do we do now? Stay out of sight? Hope they don't try again? No, Reacher said. We go on the offensive. Tell me, what time does the doorman in your building go off shift? He said he pulled a double today. He'll be there till 10 tonight. Good. There are some preparations we need to make. But first, there's a visit I want to pay. Grab your phone. Call up the telephone directory. There's an address I need you to find. Chapter 10. Reacher had heard stories over the years about people coming home, drunk or stoned, and going into the wrong house. Sometimes they were found there later, asleep in a bed or passed out on the floor. Sometimes they got shot by the home's rightful owner. Sometimes they did the shooting, thinking their own home had been invaded. Reacher had heard plenty of excuses over the course of his career. The idea of a mistaken address was one he'd always found hard to swallow. That changed when he arrived in Holly's neighborhood. He could picture it, freshly built, 2 miles west of town, one squat rectangular house after another, one rectangular lot after another, all on a succession of right-angle streets, all carved out of the surrounding fields by the flood of money flowing around the state in a wave of post-war development. It would have been easy to mistake one for another when they were freshly minted. Approaching the wrong one would still be a straightforward mistake to make, despite the minor variations that had crept in over time. There was a newer roof here, less bleached after fewer years in the ferocious Tennessee sun. An addition there, defying the neighbors' uniform contours. Some houses had fresher paint, some had greener lawns, and others had owners who'd abandoned their attempts at decorating and gardening altogether. Reacher walked up the path leading to the house next to Holly's, but he wasn't making a mistake. It was a deliberate move, because of Holly's front door. She had the worst kind, from a cop's perspective. It had no windows, so you couldn't see in from the outside. There was a peephole, so anyone on the inside could see out. And it was made out of wood panels. They were thin, useless for security. They could be kicked through in a second. About as far from a boulder rolled across the entrance to a cave as you could get. But that kind of door did have one advantage for anyone defending the premises. Easy as it would be to open, there'd be no need. They could fire right through it. A shotgun would be the best bet. Not that Reacher expected a waitress to be lurking in the hallway with a full load of double-aught. But it's what you don't expect that gets you killed. There was no answer at the neighbor's door. Reacher rang the bell again and waited. He allowed time for the demands of old legs or young babies. Then, when he was reasonably certain the house was unoccupied, he made his way down to the side of the garage. He selected a section of fence that wasn't overlooked and where the wood seemed at its strongest, and vaulted over into Holly's backyard. It looked like someone's hopes for the space had been high. Once, a long time ago. Approximately half the area was given over to a lawn. Its curved edge followed the shape of a sine wave, and it was finished with a border of rustic bricks, set end on. Only now the mortar between them was cracked, and the grass was scorched and dead. In the far corner was the wooden skeleton of an arbor. Reacher guessed it had been conceived as a place to relax, maybe with a bottle of wine in mind, maybe with a little romance. Only now the vines that had been trained over it were shriveled and dry. The trellis was smashed in several places, and the chain holding up the swinging love seat was detached on one side. The part of the yard that wasn't grass had been covered with flagstones. They clearly hadn't seen the business end of a broom for many months. There was also a round metal table painted green, with an overflowing ashtray and a pair of chairs. They were set near a sliding door. It was made of glass. Much better, Reacher thought. Reacher stayed close to the wall and moved until he was close enough to look in through the door. He could see one person, a woman. She was wearing a pink robe and sitting at a small table with a mug of coffee in front of her, untouched. She was leaning with her head in her hands and her hair was loose, cascading forward. Reacher tapped on the glass. The woman sat bolt upright. She turned to the door. Reacher got a clear view. It was Holly. Her face was creased with shock and fear, and she had a giant bruise around her left eye. She tipped her head until her hair covered her face again, then waved Reacher away. Reacher shook his head. Holly waved for him to go. Reacher made as if to knock again. He pulled his arm way back, made it clear that if he did knock, it was going to be loud. Holly jumped up, hurried to the door, slid it open, pushed Reacher back, and stepped outside. She slid the door shut, trying to be gentle, but made sure it was fully closed. "What are you doing here?" Her voice was a stern hiss. "You'll get me in trouble."
"Looks like you managed that without my help," Reacher said. "Who did that to your face?"
Holly tugged at her hair.
"No one. I was in a rush getting ready for work yesterday, and it was late when I got home, and I was tired, so I forgot I left my wardrobe door open, and I walked right into it. Anyway, my clumsiness is none of your business. What do you want? And why are you in my yard?"
"I'm here as a representative of the International Fellowship of Luddites. We're having a recruitment drive, and after last night, it occurred to me that you would be an ideal candidate." Holly's good eye narrowed, and she took half a step back.
"What's a Luddite?"
"Someone who's opposed to progress, especially any that comes from new technology. Named after an English guy, Ned Ludd. He broke a bunch of machines back in the 18th century.
"Are you crazy? I don't care about some ancient English guy, and I'm not opposed to progress."
"Then why don't you want the town's computers working again? What other reason could you have for wanting them to stay locked down?"
Holly shook her head. "You've got this all wrong. I work at the diner. Our computer's working fine. Why would I care about the towns?"
"The bozos you set on me last night certainly cared. I assumed you share their feelings."
"What bozos? Those guys have got nothing to do with me."
"Sure they do. They're your friends. Or your boyfriend's friends."
"I don't have a boyfriend."
"So you're friends then?"
"No."
"Okay then. Let me ask you this. Before last night, do you know how many times I've been mistaken for an insurance guy?"
Holly didn't reply.
0 times, Reacher said, "in the whole of my life. And then twice in half an hour. First you, then them. You had a reason. You saw me with the real insurance guy." Holly was silent. "The bozos had a reason too," Reacher said. "A different one." Holly didn't respond. "They thought I was an insurance guy because you told them I was," Reacher said. "They didn't see me getting out of the real guy's car. And let's face it, they don't have the brains to jump to their own conclusions anyway, even the wrong conclusions. Can we at least agree on that?"
"I guess," Holly said.
Everyone in town knows the insurance company is going to pay the ransom and get the computers working. The bozos wanted the insurance company to back off. That means you want the insurance company to back off. Which means you want the computers to stay locked down. Why? Holly didn't answer. Okay, Reacher said. Let's approach this from a different direction. When did your boyfriend last get himself arrested? Holly's good eye widened.
I told you, I don't have a boyfriend.
Yes, you do. She shook her head and looked at the ground. Do you smoke, Holly? She glanced at the ashtray on the table.
Sometimes. After work. When I've had a hard day.
You wear makeup at work? Holly nodded. Then how come none of those cigarette butts have lipstick on them? Holly bit her lower lip for a moment.
Because of when I smoke them. I come home from work and take off my makeup and put on my pajamas and my robe and I come out for one ciggy right before bed. It relaxes me. Helps me get off to sleep.
I don't believe you. I think they're your boyfriends. I think he sits out here in the fresh air, smoking, while you're working your tail off at the diner to pay for his habit.
No, he doesn't. She shook her head. I told you, I don't have it.
The door slid open, and a man stepped out and shoved Holly aside. He was around 6'2", skinny, with pallid skin speckled with uneven patches of ginger stubble. He had greasy hair tied up in a ponytail, which dangled between his shoulder blades. He was wearing lounge pants, baggy and shapeless and covered with cartoon superheroes, and a t-shirt that once might have been white. Stop asking questions. The guy stumbled forward. His eyes were barely open as they struggled to adjust to the sunlight. He took another step, picked up one of the metal chairs, and brandished it as if he were trying to tame a lion.
Shut your mouth and leave.
What's your name? Reacher said. The guy didn't respond. It's a simple question. Most people get to grips with their name long before they start kindergarten. Some even learn to write it down. But if you need more time, Holly and I could go inside. She could get me a cup of coffee. We could chat.
My name's Bob.
Good, Reacher said. I'll assume you're lying, but Bob's as good a name as any, so we'll go with it. Now, Bob, do you want to do this out here? I was thinking we could go upstairs. See if any more wardrobe doors have been left open. The guy glared at Holly. Although it does look like you could use some sunlight, so I'll do you a deal. Answer one question, truthfully, and I won't insert any part of that chair into any part of your body. The guy didn't reply. The last time you got arrested, Reacher said. When was that? No reply. It's not hard, Reacher said. Start with the day of the week. There are only 7 to pick from. No reply. Are your arms getting tired yet? Reacher said. Feel free to put that thing down anytime. The chair was not a great choice of weapon. It was too light to use as a club, especially against someone Reacher's size. And it was too unwieldy to stab with. The guy's best option was to throw it, preferably making it spin, and try to exploit Reacher's natural instinct to bat it away. His arms might be out of position, just for a moment. His attention might waver, very slightly. The guy might get one chance to land a blow, if he was fast enough. The guy didn't throw the chair. He took half a step and jabbed at Reacher's body with it. He took another half step and jabbed at Reacher's body again. Then he raised the chair higher and lunged for Reacher's face. Reacher grabbed the closest leg with his left hand and forced the chair out to the side. The guy clung on. He was pulling as hard as he could, desperate to retrieve it. It was his lance, his shield, his property, and he wasn't about to give it up. He was heaving with both hands, which left his head and body completely exposed. Reacher could have kept the tug of war going all afternoon, but he had a rule when it came to fights. Finish them. And finish them fast. So he launched a huge, scything roundhouse punch with his right hand. His fist hit the side of the guy's head like a sledgehammer. His feet left the ground and he flew sideways, landing crumpled in the dirt where the grass should have been, and sending up a thin plume of dust. Holly ran to him, crouched down, and felt his neck for a pulse.
Is he okay? She said. Is he alive?
Probably. Reacher replaced the chair next to the table. Physically, anyway. Now go inside. Get dressed. Grab your purse.
Why? Where are you taking me?
Nowhere. You're going on your own. You need to stay away from the house for a couple of hours. The police will be here soon. After that, you can come back. Or not. It's up to you. It took Holly 10 minutes to prepare herself to face the world. Reacher used the time to carry the inert guy onto the patio and tie him to the chair he'd just been brandishing. She appeared in the kitchen in a pink flowery sundress, white sneakers, and a denim baseball cap. She glared at Reacher, then turned away without saying a word. He looped around the side of the garage and watched her drive away in an old silver Mazda Miata with its roof up. Then he returned to the kitchen and helped himself to the coffee that was left in the pot. He waited another 10 minutes in case she doubled back. Then he made his way back to Marty's car and told Rutherford to drive to the police station. "It's time to level with me, Rusty," Reacher said as they took the first right-angle bend. "What are you not telling me?"
"Nothing."
Rutherford glanced across at Reacher.
"I mean, like what?"
"The guys who were after you. We need to figure out what they want. They don't want to kill you. Not yet, anyway, or they would have done it already. They don't want retribution, or they would have sent a couple of low-rent clowns like the ones from last night. Their operation is too sophisticated for that, and too expensive. So they must want something. Something valuable."
"I don't have anything valuable."
"What about information? Something only you know."
"I don't know anything.
Nothing important, anyway." "Maybe you do. It could be something that seemed trivial when you learned it. Something you came across at work but didn't realize the significance of at the time. You were the town's IT manager, right? So you must have had access to all the town's computers. All its data. Didn't you ever get bored and search through confidential records? Read people's emails?"
"Of course I did. Everyone does that."
"What kind of secrets did you find?"
"Nothing interesting."
"Anyone having an affair?"
"No."
"Anyone being pressured to vote a particular way?"
"Nothing about voting."
"Anyone taking bribes?"
"No."
"Any money missing?"
"Nothing like that."
Rutherford blipped the gas and swung around a garbage truck. "Maybe you picked up some information without realizing. The email from the dead journalist, for example. Could there have been any kind of message hidden in it?"
"No."
Rutherford slowed as a minivan pulled out of a driveway. "There were no attachments. And her messages were just simple questions about property records. From the 1940s or 50s, I think. Nothing I have any knowledge about, anyway. What about the regular mail? Did you receive anything unusual? At home or at the office?"
"No. I get hardly any mail. Besides bills. And junk.
Have you bought anything recently? An old book, a painting, a piece of furniture, a car, some vintage clothes? Anything a document or a computer disk could be concealed in?"
"I got some new Blu-rays.
But the ones I haven't watched yet are still sealed up in their wrappers." "Have there been any other coincidences recently? Like the journalist reaching out to you, then winding up dead?"
"I can't think of any. My life really isn't very exciting. All I did was work for the town."
"I believe you, Rusty. But if I find out you were moonlighting for NASA or the CIA, I'm going to be pissed."
"I wish. But can you really see a bunch of rocket scientists or spies knocking on my door, asking for my help?
I told you about my only side project, the one I was working on with my friend. And it's worthless. It didn't work. Nobody wants it. Not even me."
Chapter 11.
Reacher left Rutherford in the car like he was a kid. Or a dog. It wasn't a decision Reacher was entirely happy with. He knew there were risks. He'd heard there were laws against leaving kids in cars. He wasn't sure about dogs. But the risks Reacher was worried about were different ones anyway. He wasn't concerned about overheating or dehydration or the vehicle getting stolen with Rutherford strapped inside it. He was thinking about the odds of a guy like Marty passing by, spotting Rutherford, pulling out a burner phone, summoning the cavalry, or of Detective Goodyear recognizing his friend's car and starting in with questions that Reacher wasn't ready to answer. Not yet. Which was the whole point of his being there. Risk versus reward.
the opportunity to test a theory, to join some vital dots, or to find out he was wrong. Either way, just as valuable. Either way, better to hurry. Officer Rule was still behind the counter when Reacher got to the basement. She looked up from a form she was working on, and Reacher swore he saw her eyes brighten when she spotted him. Or perhaps he just hoped they did. "Mr. Reacher," she said, "any luck finding Rusty Rutherford?" "False alarm," Reacher said. "Turns out he's fine. I could use your help with something else, though." Officer Rule folded her arms.
"Who's missing this time?"
"No one. It's about a recent case, a murder. A journalist who was found cut into pieces. I read about it in the paper. I need to know one thing. When the parts of her body were dumped, were they stuffed into suitcases?" All traces of good humor disappeared from Officer Rule's face.
"That's an awful case. I can't discuss it, you know that. Detective Goodyear's handling it. You can ask him. But he won't tell you either."
"Is he here?"
"Not right now.
I only have the one question. It's a yes or no answer, please."
"You know I can't."
"Would you if you could?"
"Maybe."
"Then how about a trade? I scratch your back, you scratch mine." Officer Rule paused.
"What have you got?"
"There's a woman who works at the diner opposite Rutherford's building, Holly. She has a boyfriend who's an air thief she's so embarrassed about she won't even admit he exists to her co-workers." Officer Rule shook her head. "They know anyway, of course. Makeup can only cover so many bruises. But if you're trying to tempt me with a domestic violence beef, you can forget it. I've been down that road with Holly before. It goes nowhere. She won't cooperate." "What if you could put an end to the domestic violence without needing Holly's help, and put a major feather in your cap at the same time?"
"How could I do that?"
"How long has the boyfriend been on the scene?"
"A couple of years, at least."
Officer Rule frowned. "I don't know exactly when he showed up. I'm just going by when I first saw bruises and started asking questions." "Did you run the guy's name through the computer?"
"Of course. He came back clean."
"Are you sure it was his real name?" Officer Rule shrugged. "Did you run his prints?" Reacher said.
"No. I couldn't arrest him. Holly wouldn't press charges, and there was no other evidence it was him who hit her."
"Has he been arrested for anything else in the last couple of weeks, since the computers have been locked down?"
"I don't know.
Without the computers, it's not as easy to keep up with who's doing what as it normally is.
Why?"
"I think you should check," Reacher said. "I think you'll find he was arrested recently. And I think there's another reason Holly keeps him secret."
"Like what?"
"Could you do some digging and find out if he gave you his real name? And if he has any aliases?"
"Maybe.
If I had a good reason to." "Do you have any friends you could call in other police departments? Ones with working computers who could run whatever names you find?"
"Maybe. If you tell me why."
"The guy who gave me a ride into town yesterday is an insurance agent. He's here to negotiate the ransom that needs to be paid so that you can get your computers back up. Holly saw me get out of his car. Then she eavesdropped on my conversation with Rutherford at the diner and got the wrong end of the stick. She thought I worked for the insurance company too, which is why she called in those goons to tell me to back off. The question is, why would she do that? Who could benefit from keeping the computers offline?"
Officer Rule frowned, then blinked.
Then her smile returned brighter than ever. "Someone who's wanted in another jurisdiction."
"I'd go one further," Reacher said. "I'd guess someone wanted in another jurisdiction for something serious. Something where the statute of limitations is about to time out."
"Which is why he's been laying low for so long. Sponging off poor Holly. He slipped, but at just the right time, for him, because our routine computer checks were impossible. Why is it that assholes have all the luck? Maybe his luck's about to change. I'd happily change it for him, if those phone calls pan out, and if I could find him. Maybe, acting on a hunch, you could take a look in Holly's backyard.
Any time in the next 90 minutes should do it.
For real?
Reacher nodded.
Maybe I will take a look in her yard.
Maybe you're right about the suitcases, too. But you didn't hear that from me. It was kept away from the press for fear of copycats, and as a test for anyone claiming to be a witness.
Thank you, Officer Rule.
And good luck with your phone calls.
Reacher, wait, I have a question for you. How did you know?
About Holly's boyfriend?
No. About the suitcases?
It's part of something I'm working on. Maybe. I'm still joining the dots.
Be careful where you tread. This is an active investigation. You shouldn't be anywhere near it. If you know something, you have to tell me.
Don't worry. I will. When I'm sure. Rutherford was asleep when Reacher got back to the car. Like a kid. Or a dog.
Get what you need, Rutherford said, rubbing his eyes as Reacher slid into the passenger seat.
Another piece of the puzzle, Reacher said. Maybe.
So what's next on the list?
Accommodations.
You could stay at my place.
Thanks, but no. And you can't stay there either. You saw the woman from yesterday watching your building. That shows they know where you live. We need to find somewhere else. Somewhere discreet. Anonymous. Where we can come and go without attracting attention. And in a convenient location. A motel outside town, maybe. Or near the highway.
Rutherford reached for the button to start the engine, then pulled his hand back and took out his phone.
I'll have to Google it. I've lived here my whole life, so I've never stayed in a hotel in town.
He pressed and clicked and scrolled for a couple of minutes, then lowered the phone.
And there's another problem.
No offense, Reacher, but are you really the kind of guy who can come and go without attracting attention, regardless of how anonymous or discreet a motel is?
Reacher said nothing.
How about this as an alternative? Rutherford said. I have the key to a neighbor's apartment. It's on the same floor opposite mine. The guy who owns it is away on a cruise. He hates the heat, so he's away most of the year. Except winter. I keep an eye on the place for him. And water his plants. We could both stay there. My friend wouldn't mind, and no one else would know. In fact, it could help us. Because if anyone saw us going into the building, they'd assume we were heading for my apartment. So they wouldn't search for us, but they'd actually be looking in the wrong place. And if anyone tried to pay us a visit, the doorman would call my cell. We could watch them watching us.
That might work.
Reacher paused.
Is there a garage at your building?
Yes, in the basement. Access is from the street behind.
Is your car there?
Rutherford nodded.
Each unit gets one space. You can rent more if you want. And there are visitor spots if you want to park this car in one.
This car can stay on the street, Reacher said. Have you got any duct tape at your place?
Why would I have duct tape?
How about a sharp knife?
I have a couple of kitchen knives, but they're not super sharp. I'm not much of a chef.
Where's the nearest hardware store?
I'm not sure.
But there's a truck stop near the highway that sells those things. The truck stop wasn't the biggest Reacher had ever been in, but it was close. More of a small village than a large gas station. It had pizza restaurants and burger joints and fried chicken stands, two motels, a coffee shop, even a souvenir shop. The forecourt with the fuel pumps was almost the size of a football field, but it still seemed like an afterthought. The pumps were divided into two groups, four banks of regular-sized ones for cars and SUVs, and six banks of larger ones, spread wider and farther apart, for the trucks and their trailers. They left the car at one of the regular pumps and headed into the main building. Rutherford took a moment to get his bearings, then led Reacher to a cabinet full of knives. Reacher picked out two, a large one and a small one. The large one he didn't particularly like due to its dull, cheap steel, but he took it anyway because he figured it looked intimidating, which could be a useful quality. The smaller one was much more satisfactory. Its blade folded so it would fit easily in a pocket. It had a good sharp edge and a mechanism that allowed it to open with a flick of the wrist. Reacher took it too. He paid for the knives with cash, then loaded two rolls of duct tape into his basket, along with a can of pepper spray for Rutherford. Reacher was heading back to the register when he spotted a clothing section. Of sorts.
He rooted around until he unearthed a pair of khaki pants and a pale green t-shirt that he thought would fit. He added a denim shirt he figured could double as a light jacket. Then he settled up for his goods and prepaid for some gas. He handed a bag containing everything but the clothes to Rutherford and went to the restroom to change. He transferred his toothbrush and passport and ATM card and cash into his new pockets and dumped the old garments in the trash. When he emerged, he found Rutherford between two heated cabinets that dispensed the sausages for self-assembly hot dogs. "I got these for you," Rutherford said, and held out a different bag. Reacher took it and looked inside. He saw two brightly colored boxes. One contained a cell phone, the other a Bluetooth earpiece. He handed the bag back to Rutherford. "Thanks, Rusty. I appreciate the thought. But I'm not a cell phone guy." "Please, take it," Rutherford said. "It's really for me. You can't be at my side 24/7, and it would make me feel better knowing I could call if I need you. Even waiting here just now got me so nervous I almost followed you into the bathroom. And look," Rutherford reached into the bag and took out the phone. "I got you the oldest-fashioned kind they had. It was the last one left. It doesn't even go online. It can make calls and it can text, that's all. I'll set it up for you. I'll keep it charged. And when this is all over, if you don't want it anymore, give it back. I'm sure there's a museum somewhere that would take it." Reacher said nothing, but he did let Rutherford pass him the bag. The same time Reacher was changing his clothes, Speransky's burner phone was starting to ring. He picked up right away. It was a very short call, from a man a short distance away. A report. First, a fact. Then an opinion. Brief and concise. Leaving Speransky feeling mightily relieved. He took a sip of iced tea, then dialed a number on his secure phone. "You can recall the team," Speransky said when the call was answered. "Rutherford and the Drifter are back in town." "You've seen them?" the voice at the end of the line said. "No. My contact in the police department reported it." "He didn't arrest them?" "He didn't come into contact with them. Not directly. Another officer did. She mentioned it without realizing the significance. Why did they come back? I don't know. Maybe Rutherford got cold feet about flying. Maybe the Drifter contacted him and called him back. We'll find out." "They give any clue where they're going?" "Nothing concrete." "Okay. We'll cover Rutherford's building, the coffee shop, and the diner. He doesn't usually stray far." "Good. One other thing. Have the team swing by the ambush site on their way to town. Or a couple of them, at least. My man was supposed to deliver the Drifter. Something obviously happened to him. I'll have them check. We can arrange cleanup if necessary. And if it's not necessary, make it necessary. The man failed, or he sold us out. Either way, he's no use now." Back outside, Reacher pumped the gas, then told Rutherford to drive to the street behind his building and stop 20 yards short of the entrance to the garage. "Is there a camera on the outside?" Reacher said when they arrived. "Yes," Rutherford pointed. "There's one right above the door. Sometimes, if it's late and it's raining and a nice doorman is working, you can flash your headlights and he opens it for you remotely. Saves you getting out. How do you open it normally?" "With a fob. You just hold it up to a sensor. And there's a keypad for backup." "Does the code get changed frequently?" "No." Rutherford rolled his eyes. "It's been 1, 2, 3, 4 ever since I moved in." "How's the garage laid out?" "You drive down a ramp, which curves to the left. You're supposed to honk, but no one does. Then the main space is just a basic rectangle. There are pillars every 3 car widths apart, spaces along each side, and a double row in the center." "Cameras?" Rutherford thought for a moment. "Yes. There are those little half-globes dotted around on the ceiling. I couldn't say how many." "Is there pedestrian access to the building?" "Yes. There's a door at the far end. It leads to a flight of steps up to the lobby. You need your fob to open it, or there's another keypad you can use." "Good. We'll risk one drive-by. Then I want you to loop around to the front of the building and stop somewhere with a clear view of the main entrance." Rutherford drove slowly past the garage entrance, then cut through an alley, squeezing past a pair of dumpsters, and rolled the car to the curb diagonally opposite the diner. He left the engine running, ready to go. Reacher scanned the street ahead, working systematically, projecting a mental grid across the storefronts and the sections of sidewalk. No one was loitering. No one was waiting in any of the parked cars. No vehicle passed them more than once. No one was out walking. Rutherford took the new cell phone out of its box. Reacher repeated his scan, looking behind them this time. Rutherford worked at a credit card-sized piece of plastic until he'd separated a section that held a little gold chip. He inserted it into a slot in the back of the phone. He slid the battery into place over it and hit the power button. Reacher repeated his scan to the front. Saw no one. The phone lit up and played a tinny electronic tune. Reacher repeated his scan behind. Saw no one. "There's a little charge in the battery," Rutherford said, and passed the phone to Reacher. "Are we going to be in the car for a while? I could charge it the rest of the way." "No," Reacher said. "The coast's clear. It's time to move. Here's what I want you to do. Go into your building and tell the doorman you came back from the airport because you forgot something. Tell him you rebooked your flight for this afternoon and you're going to drive to the airport this time, but need his advice about when you should leave to get there by 4:15. Whatever time he suggests, you should thank him. Say you'll see him in a couple of weeks when you get back. Then head upstairs. Only don't stay in your own apartment. Go to your neighbor's. Wait for me there. Okay?"
"Okay."
Rutherford handed the car key to Reacher and opened his door. "And I'll text you when I get there. You have a phone now. You might as well use it." Chapter 12. Rutherford's text arrived after 5 minutes. It contained 2 words. "In. Safe." Reacher read it, waited another 5 minutes, then took the truck stop bag from the back seat, climbed out of the car, and headed into Rutherford's lobby. The doorman's booth jutted out from the side wall, opposite the elevators, equally spaced between the front entrance and a door, which Reacher assumed led to the stairs to the garage. It had mahogany sides that matched the panels on the walls, and its green-veined marble top was the same pattern as the floor, as far as Reacher could tell. At least 80% of its surface was covered. There were ring binders full of directories and procedures and regulations, a computer monitor, a phone bristling with all kinds of buttons and displays, and a cell phone with a large screen. The space behind the counter was probably the regular size, but the doorman seemed to completely fill it. He looked like he was in his late 20s with a shaved head, a doughy face, small eyes, and a heavy build. Very heavy. The kind of guy who had done well on the high school football team, Reacher figured, but whose life had been all downhill from there. "Help you?" the guy said. The years Reacher spent in the military police had taught him that most investigations go with the numbers. A wife turns up dead, it's usually the husband who killed her. Something goes missing from the stores, it's usually a quartermaster who stole it. Someone shares secrets, it's usually for the money. Unless they're being blackmailed, which is less common. Or tricked. Or acting on principle, which is the rarest thing of all. "Name your price," Reacher said. The guy stared back blankly. "For what?" "You just made a call. Or sent a text. Or an email. Name your price to message me instead in future." The guy stretched out and covered his phone. It completely disappeared beneath his giant paw. "I didn't send a text. I don't know what you're talking about." "Sure you do," Reacher said. "You just had a conversation with Mr. Rutherford. Then you told someone what time he's leaving for the airport. Just like you told them he asked for a cab this morning." The guy was suddenly on his feet. He was as tall as Reacher, as wide as Reacher, maybe faster than Reacher. "You want to hurt Mr. Rutherford? Try it. See what happens." Reacher paused. Investigations go with the numbers. If the guy wasn't motivated by money, then what? Blackmail was next in line, statistically, but Reacher couldn't see it. And principle is the rarest thing of all. "Outstanding." Reacher held out his hand. "I knew you'd pass, but we can't be too careful. Not when Mr. Rutherford's safety is at stake. I'm glad you're on the team. We're on a team?
Of course. Keeping Mr. Rutherford safe. You heard he got attacked on the street yesterday.
The guy nodded.
I was the one who saved him, Reacher said.
That was you?
He shook Reacher's hand.
Thank you. I like Mr. Rutherford. He's always nice to the building staff. I like some of the assholes who live here. I could tell you some stories.
I bet you could, Reacher said. But after yesterday, we have to be extra careful. There might be a leak. That's why they sent me here, to see if anyone changed signs.
Not me,
clearly. What about the other doormen? Can we trust them?
I think so. The day guys, anyway. The others I don't know so well. But Mr. Rutherford doesn't go out much at night anyway, unless he's working. Then he's out all night sometimes, if he's upgrading the systems or whatever those computer guys do.
Okay, good. Reacher leaned forward and gestured for the guy to move in closer. Now here's the thing. I'm going to level with you. We think whoever tried to hurt Mr. Rutherford yesterday is going to try again today. I'm here to stop them, but I need your help. I need you to do two things. Are you with me?
What two things?
First, show me how I can see the pictures from the garage security cameras. Then I need to take your place for a while.
You can watch the cameras on here, the guy said.
He pressed the spacebar on the computer keyboard and the screen lit up. It was divided into 9 rectangles. The one at the top left showed the street outside the garage entrance. Each of the others gave a different view of the inside in clear, crisp color. It records, so I don't have to watch all the time, but I do when I'm bored.
Sounds good, Reacher said. Now, is there a closet anywhere?
Sure. The guy pointed to a door disguised amongst the panels to the side of the booth.
Right there.
Why?
This is the part where I really need you to trust me.
Reacher set the bag from the truck stop down on the countertop. I need to make it look like I overpowered you, in case anything goes wrong. We need to safeguard your cover. I need you to lay low in there for a while, and I have to warn you, it could be a couple of hours. I don't know exactly what kind of schedule these guys are on, and I have to make it look convincing. These are animals we're dealing with here. So I'm going to use a little tape, just a bit around your wrists and your ankles. I better put a piece over your mouth, too. I'm sorry, I know it's not pleasant, but it's the only way to keep Mr. Rutherford safe.
Speransky was poring over a large-scale map, thinking about parking and power supplies for his next project, when his secure phone rang.
Two things, the voice at the other end of the line said. First, the team found your man. Trussed up with his own handcuffs at the place he was supposed to deliver the drifter. He's no longer on the payroll, as requested.
Speransky didn't reply.
Second, Rutherford has been located.